is real, is real. What we feel, then let it go.
On WSLR LP 96.5 FM in Sarasota and WBPV LP 100.1 FM in Bradenton. This is Rick Knowlton with your WSLR news headlines for Thursday, July 24th, 2025. In Florida, the movement championed as parental rights has been handed a setback by the U.S. 11th Circuit Court of Appeals. A victory for the Leon County school system. Starting back in 2020, as a personal matter involving a 13-year-old child who wished to be referred to with gender-neutral they-them pronouns, the issue became a lawsuit, then a national flashpoint around students of non-conforming gender identities, their parents, and institutions, frequently cited as Governor DeSantis pushed through his so-called Don't Say Gay agenda, and Moms for Liberty took root. But in March 2025, Judge Robin Rosenbaum explained, the school district did not force the child to do anything at all and sought to help the child. The mere fact that school officials acted contrary to the parents' wishes does not mean their conduct shocks the conscience in a constitutional sense. Finally, the 11th Circuit Court of Appeals has declined to reconsider Rosenbaum's decision. Sarasota County Commissioners have approved $2.1 million for arts organizations in the 2026 fiscal year. Last year, commissioners opposed funding to Embrace Our Differences, Sarasota International Chalk Festival, and Fogartyville Concerts. But this year, all 33 panelist-recommended organizations were approved with no argument for grants between approximately $22,000 and $118,000. Of the three losing out last year, only Fogartyville reapplied, this time securing a grant of $22,768. Also Youth is back with a new home in Sarasota. The group, dedicated since 1992 to building understanding and support for LGBT plus young Sarasotans, lost its long-standing center in downtown Sarasota, devastated by Hurricane Milton. The nonprofit organization is making a fresh start now on Ringling Boulevard, among city offices just a block north of Payne Park. This has been Rick Knowlton with your WSLR News Headlines for Thursday, July 24th, 2025.
Welcome to The Detail. I am your host, Kathy Ann Tunis, and you are listening to The Detail on WSLR 96.5 LPFM in Sarasota, Florida, and WBPV 100.1 LPFM in Bradenton, Florida. Programming at WSLR is supported by listeners like you and by Ringling College Galleries and Exhibitions. Ringling College's 2024-25 exhibition season features art from Ringling students, alumni, faculty, and nationally recognized artists from a wide range of mediums and from diverse backgrounds. More information is available at ringlingcollege.gallery. And the views and opinions expressed by hosts, guests, and callers on WSLR programs are their own and do not necessarily reflect those of WSLR, its staff, or volunteers. Thank you all so much for joining me today. I have Chris Costello in the house. She is the senior organizing manager with Sierra Club in Florida. Chris, thank you so much for joining me.
It's a pleasure to be here.
Yeah, you've been doing this for a long time with Sierra Club. Tell us a bit about that. It's been 18 years?
Sure. Yeah, Sierra Club Florida hired me in 2007. Actually, that was during the organizing drive to get a strong urban fertilizer ordinance in the county. And I started working on that. I worked on panther protection and other water quality issues. phosphate mining issue, and then moved through the organization with a number of whatever changes in title, and now am the senior organizing manager for all of our conservation foundation-funded work. So that is our Everglades Restoration Campaign, our Stop Pre-Harvest Sugar Field Burning Campaign, our water quality work, which focuses on nitrogen and phosphorus pollution, nutrient mm-hmm. pollution, mm-hmm. And our wildlands campaign that focuses fairly exclusively on stopping sprawl, stopping development in order to protect wildlife corridors, wildlife species, et cetera.
You've, in your just introduction, practically everything you've spoken about is something that we've covered here in one form or another on this show. So, yeah, it's amazing the breadth and scope of the work that Sierra Club does here in Florida. And as long as I've been active in local politics, your name is synonymous with Sierra Club. Like Chris Costello, Sierra Club. I just know that's how I know you. So it's really been a pleasure recently to spend more time with you. I'm going to read the mission of Sierra Club. Well, first, this is an old organization in the United States, 1892, and John Muir started Sierra Club in San Francisco. I had the pleasure of visiting Muir Woods, and anybody who's been there, it's just an amazing forest outside of San Francisco. And I was telling you before the show, I'm grateful that I got to go there in the 90s. I think I was there a few times. I tried to go maybe 5 years ago, and it was, I had to leave. It was just so crowded. Something.
Yeah, people talk about we love our natural spaces to death, our wild spaces to death, but part of the reason for that is that the number of our wild spaces that we have access to, not only in Florida, but across the country, are diminishing. And so those few spaces that are left, more people want to get to them. Why do you go out into the wild? It's respite.
Yeah.
It is renewal. It is an escape from all of that daily life. So it's important to all human beings.
Yeah, we need that connection, but I think there's plenty of information out there demonstrating, proving that, you know, being in nature changes your physiology, it changes your mental state, it is restorative, you know, and brings you into a peaceful state, which God knows we need. Right.
That is correct. That's absolutely right. And it points to the bipartisan or the nonpartisan nature of nature. We all need it. It is not something that just Democrats or independents want and need. It's not a Green Party issue. It is an every party issue. It relates to quality of life. It relates to public health. It relates to pretty much everything that is important to human beings. And that is, I think, that will be the savior of the environment eventually, that it will stop. It must stop being a partisan issue.
Yeah, it has. Well, and the thing is, some of the biggest environmentalists and naturalists are hunters. I mean, you might not necessarily agree. I know people disagree about whether or not there should be hunting, but the fact is, hunters really care that there is a wildlife space, significant wildlife space, and that animals in the ecosystem thrive.
That's absolutely right. You do not have to be a vegan or a vegetarian to respect wildlife and the wild spaces and want to protect them.
Yeah. So the mission of the Florida chapter, Sierra Club Florida, I'm just going to read this off your website. Sierra Club Florida is made up of volunteer leaders and civic activists representing over 32,000 members. Our mission is to enjoy, explore, and protect the natural and threatened places in Florida, to teach others to understand and respect the fragile environment in which we live, and to support equal environmental justice for all. So I want to ask you about what you mean, what Sierra Club means by equal environmental justice for all. But before I do that, the Florida ecosystem, as I understand it, is unique in the world. It doesn't exist in this way anyplace else. Is that, am I accurate on that?
That is certainly true. We have iconic, unique features like the Everglades. We have the abundance of first and second magnitude freshwater springs. We are a peninsula. And so as a peninsula and, in the zone, in the growing zone that we inhabit, we are certainly unique in the United States. And, as I said, in many respects, we're unique in the world.
Yeah. Unique in the world. It is something. So what do you mean by equal environmental justice for all?
So I think the basis of that really starts at the fact, and it is a fact, that you cannot separate the natural and the human environments. They are one and the same. We all, no matter where we live, are impacted by the natural environment, or we impact the natural environment in whatever, how many ever, in a myriad of ways. And so when you look at what human beings do to the earth, whether it is mining or energy, fossil fuel energy infrastructure, or industry, any industry infrastructure, whether it is waste management or anything really that is built up, that is kind of unsightly and unpleasant for people to see, it won't be a surprise that those unpleasant, dirty, toxic types of infrastructure that humans create, at least in this country, are put into generally disenfranchised communities. They are either marginalized or less wealthy communities, white communities in mountain areas, in rural areas, or they are brown or black communities in more urban areas. And so environmental justice or equal environmental justice for all means that it just can't be the wealthy white folks that are protected from environmental dangers. And in fact, the movement Sierra Club Florida, takes its lead from those frontline communities. And when I say frontline, I mean it. Those people that are at the front lines of these environmental disasters, environmental threats, they have to lead. Because those of us that are lucky enough to live outside of the view or the direct impact of those environmental threats, aren't the ones that we should be listening to or following. People have to be empowered to tell us, and work with us, and we need to work with them in order to make change. It is not fair in anyone's book that one kind of people should bear the brunt of our environmental disastrous behavior or practices. And that's what the Sierra Club is about.
So on your website, we talked about this. We're going to be talking this morning about a new species of whale that you all are educating the public about that is unique to the Gulf. And there are fewer than 100 left, the Rice's whale. There is this evening, just for everybody to know, and listeners of the show will be familiar with Charles Reith. He is speaking. He leads the Sarasota Urban Reforesters Group, SURF, and is heading up a meeting of the Sarasota Manatee Sierra Group this evening at Selby Library at 6:30 p.m., 6:30 to 7:30 p.m. You can hear about urban reforestation, which is something I think the local Sierra Club may be looking at getting more involved in. But listening to Charles, as he's been on my show before, it's really amazing what can be done to accelerate reforestation in urban or suburban spaces. So that's this evening. Alligator Alcatraz, besides being a human rights disaster, it's an Everglades restoration disaster, which I didn't even really think or know about. And then there's the Florida bear hunt decision coming up in August. So we've got all of that to get to and a good reason to keep listening. But Amendment 1, you had spoken about our disappearing wild spaces and how our national parks have become kind of overpopulated at times, you know, as I described, because we don't have enough wild spaces. Back in 2014, Amendment 4 passed. Amendment 1. Thank you for correcting me. Amendment 1 passed in 2014 in Florida. And Amendment 1 was the Florida Land, Water and Land Conservation Initiative. It was designed to dedicate 33% of net revenue from existing excise taxes on documents. So like if you close on a house, there's dock tax. You know, there's a document tax when you do anything with the clerk. It's a few bucks, maybe 100. It just depends. But a third of that was to go to fund the Land Acquisition Trust Fund, which that began in 1963. But its funding had been dwindling. And essentially, it won decisively. I don't think it was close.
75% of the electorate voted for it.
75% of people. But the reality is, it really has not been implemented the way it was meant to. And in another, in June of 2018, a ruling to uphold it was overturned. Well, there was a ruling to uphold it because the Sierra Club, Florida Wildlife Federation, St. John's Riverkeeper, the Environmental Confederation of Southwest Florida sued to uphold this amendment that passed decisively.
That's right.
Okay. And in June of 2018, the Speaker of the House, Richard Corcoran, and at that time, Speaker of the House, same Richard Corcoran that's heading up New College, and Joe Negron, who was the head of the Senate, appealed the case to the Florida District Court of Appeals. And can you tell us what happened there? I mean, they essentially overturned it.
Well, we actually, Sierra Club and those other partners, represented by Earth Justice at the time, litigated the failure to appropriately appropriate the Land Acquisition Trust Fund in 2015. That was the first legislative session that the law was in effect. Mm-hmm. And so our litigation started in 2015. We had a series of court decisions, and we or they kept appealing it. It was about, in the first year, the absurd misappropriation of those Land Acquisition Trust Fund dollars. The legislature in 2015 used those monies that were from the Land Acquisition Trust Fund. So they were for land acquisition.
For conservation.
That's right. But they used them to buy baseball caps for farmers and satellite TV for FDEP offices and FDEP trucks and furniture and everything.
So that's the Florida Department of Environmental Protection.
That is correct.
And this is, you know, an amendment to the state constitution is, it ought to be anyway, a sacrosanct sort of thing. This should be honored, right?
It should be, but Florida history is that they are not. We have very few constitutional amendments that were proposed and promoted and passed by volunteer grassroots involvement that have actually been implemented by the legislature. And that is a sad, sorry history that we could go into for a long time. Mm-hmm. But with the Land Acquisition Trust Fund, what happened between 2015 and this past legislative session is that FDP either misappropriated or did not spend those monies. The reason the constitutional amendment initiative was started was because land acquisition, conservation land acquisition funding, purchase, et cetera, had gone down drastically. It started pretty much in 2007, 2008 with that economic downturn of that time. Mm-hmm. And, so the idea was now we had all of this money to spend and the legislature didn't spend it. In fact,
well, when you say spend it, because if I were listening, I'd be like, well, you shouldn't spend it just to spend it. But this was to protect the environment.
Oh, absolutely. This was to buy land that had been vetted through the Florida Forever program vetting process, meaning the land was looked at, appraised, valued as for conservation value, water quality impacts, climate resilience, wildlife.
There was a list.
There always has been a list. There's been a list for decades. And so those funds could have been directly applied to all of those parcels on that Florida Forever list mm-hmm. or ARC list. And they could have been spent. And those properties on that list They could have been invested.
On behalf of Floridians. That's really the thing. It's an investment in our state's health, well-being, future, even I would say flood management.
Flood attenuation.
Right?
Absolutely. Biodiversity. The list goes on and on. And all of those parcels are owned by willing sellers. So, of course, there's a process to actually purchase those, but the process of finding those parcels owned by willing sellers and valuing that land exists. So
and that's a lot of investment of time and resources to get that list together.
It is. It is. And that is also an investment that the people of Florida, the taxpayers, and the state agencies have made. And so to not spend that money was, I don't know, I'm still gobsmacked over it.
I'm going to get a little, it's to not invest that money.
Because absolutely.
You kind of fall into a trap when you talk about, because government spending, it has this negative connotation, but it is jaw-dropping to me how we've gone down this horrific rabbit hole when even our amendments to our Constitution essentially mean nothing to the legislators we send to uphold them. I mean, that's what happened here. And there's a sunset date on Amendment 1. It's only good for 20 years, right?
That's right.
Yeah. So we're talking, this was 2014. So for the past 11 years, we've had a legislature that has thumbed its nose at what 75% of Floridians told them to do.
That's right. And it's no small bit of change. In the past few years, 5 years or more, it's been about $1.2 billion that are there in the fund to invest. And they have not.
They haven't done it. And I would argue this has direct impact, obviously, on our natural environment, but also on our human dwelling environment. For flood mitigation, and in Sarasota County, we've had really serious impacts in the past year where maybe people are waking up that this isn't just a tree hugging, you know, something that you could dismiss out of hand as some people do. This is really key to human quality of life as well as panthers and bears and all, you know.
Absolutely. The natural environment, wild space, is made by Mother Nature to attenuate flooding. Wetlands, space, mm-hmm. Over millions of years, the natural environment has figured out how to deal with those things in order to protect its inhabitants. We destroy that every time we pave something over.
Yeah.
Absolutely. There is a direct connection.
Yeah. And so I think these long game aspects get missed. The fact that Amendment 1 in 2014 And again, it was called the Florida Water and Land Conservation Initiative. It passed with 75% of the vote. And I just think it bears repeating that our legislature has done nothing. They've worked against it. They've litigated against it. We've paid for our legislators, led by Richard Corcoran at the time, to litigate against our directive that these wild spaces be purchased and that we have a land trust, you know, to protect. Because let's face it, I think I was drawing palm trees and orange trees when I was a little kid and looking at the weather map on the Today Show with Willard Scott and seeing the balmy temperatures in Florida. I think people know and they move here because of the natural environment, because we know that it is special, right? And we want to enjoy that. So it's pretty sad and reprehensible.
It is
the legislature.
It is.
That's my take.
It is, but I'm gonna inject some hope here.
Yeah, good. Thank you.
in the past year, last August, in fact, almost a year ago, the Governor DeSantis and his Florida Department of Environmental Protection proposed a plan to put resort hotels and golf courses and pickleball courts in 9 state parks. And in a week, I think it was 9 days, actually, we shut the entire thing down. And when I say we, Sierra Club coordinated the protests around the state, but it wasn't only the Sierra Club. It was every walk of life, every kind of organization and neighborhood and city and county.
People were
outraged,
yeah.
Because state parks are important to everyone.
Mm-hmm.
It is, yes, the legislature has done awful things with regard to acquiring and investing in conservation land. But the fact that Floridians of all political stripes care about their state parks and that wild space that they can escape to and enjoy means that there is hope for the future if people would especially concentrate on what is most important to their quality of life and vote accordingly.
Yeah.
That is very important. And I'm not sure that people do that. Again, it's not about party. It's about what is important to us as human beings and what creates a quality of life that we want for ourselves and our children and our grandchildren.
Yeah. Yeah. So tell me, Chris, about what's going on in the Everglades, which I don't even like the name Alligator Alcatraz because it's like kind of glib and, you know, markety. But to me, it's an internment camp that Governor DeSantis has set up, a no-do process internment camp in the middle of the Everglades. Whether or not you agree with me, that's just my take. I don't think it's funny. I think it's a serious betrayal of the Constitution. But it's not just that for me. I'm learning through the Sierra Club that this is actually an assault on Everglades restoration. How so?
Sure. It starts way back in the early 1970s when that piece of land was proposed for the biggest jet port in the world. And that idea was defeated and really was the beginning of the Everglades restoration movement and community and campaign. What it ended up being is a small airport in Collier County that is smack dab in the middle of both Big Cypress National Preserve and Miccosukee Tribal Territory. And so when you put anything other than this small airport that is not active at night. In fact, Big Cypress National Preserve is designated as a dark sky, an international dark sky location. It's where one of the only places in Florida you can still see the Milky Way when you look up.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Oh.
So that small airport, it's not great. But it's nothing compared to what they've put on top of it. So what they've done is create very quickly infrastructure for this detention center, and we generally call it the Everglades ICE Detention Center.
Okay.
But you are correct. Alligator Alcatraz is the official name. It is horrifying, but that is its official name. But it is contrary to all of the Everglades restoration projects and land acquisition, et cetera, that we have been working on, we as a community, since the 70s.
Well, we've been investing in, right? We've been putting dollars into, you know, this kind of restoration. So, Chris, just to make sure I'm understanding this correctly, you're saying that when was this jet airport place proposed? It was in the 70s?
I think it was 1970 I think that's correct.
So 1970, and you know, if possession is 9/10 of the law, they went ahead and just put a landing strip down.
You know,
Is that right?
I can't remember. I mean, obviously,
there's one there now.
Yeah, I was 7 years old at the time.
Okay, me too.
But I should know the history better. What I know is that the jet port was defeated, and this is a very small landing strip that is used very
infrequently.
It's more a training facility than anything else.
Okay,
planes don't land at night. There are very few planes that use it.
But because that big swath of concrete is there. Because if it were swamp, there'd be no reason. I mean, it seems to me that the landing strip itself has made for the opportunity to put the detention center on top of it, right? I mean, they're not going to just put it in you can't just put it in a swamp. You have to have something to put it on top of.
I'm sure that that made it easier, but it still disregards all of the facts. There is no way that they can contain the entire operation on just those runways that exist.
Okay.
There have been, there's proof that they have laid concrete, additional concrete. You have to remember that just the trucks and the vehicles going in and out is an incredible burden on that ecosystem. You have all the waste that is being created that has to be
the porta potty.
Either dealt with there, which would be a disaster, or carried out, which is also a disaster. All of that fossil fuel being burned, all of that light pollution, all of the insecticide that they are probably using, because it is a place where there are a lot of mosquitoes. Mm-hmm. And so no matter what they do, it is going to be an affront. It's going to be really catastrophic for that ecosystem, that environment there, not to mention for the Miccosukee tribe that has its life is there. Its religious ceremonies are there. It is a small piece of land that is in fact owned by Miami-Dade County in the middle of Big Cypress National Preserve, which is in Collier County. So it is a very twisted kind of situation. Mm. And DeSantis, by using his powers under his state of emergency, has until now been able to get away with.
Mm. So, I would say misusing his state of emergency powers. So tell me about the wildlife just leave. I mean, they're not going to hang out the way they did, I would expect. Is that basically what happens? So they get pushed into areas where there's already homes of gators and, you know, like tell somebody who might say, yeah, but you know, how is it really a disaster?
Sure. So if you think about, the most endangered species in that region, I'll start with the smallest that people might recognize, the Florida bonneted bat. It's a very small bat. Mm-hmm. It is critically endangered, and it needs darkness like all bats do. Mm. It needs mosquitoes to eat. That's what they eat.
Yeah.
And so putting lights on and disturbing the natural fauna and flora is very dangerous to the Florida bonneted bat. But let's now talk about the biggest one, the Florida panther. The Florida panther lives in Southwest Florida, its existence is critically threatened. There are maybe 200 panthers, Florida panthers existing in the world today in Southwest Florida. Every encroachment upon their territory, especially primary or secondary habitat, meaning where they raise their young and where they hunt most, is a threat to their existence. This is an existential threat to both of those species. The Florida panther is an umbrella species, meaning there are many other endangered species that depend on the habitat upon which the panther depends. And so when you destroy panther habitat or you destroy its natural life cycle, you are destroying that for those species under the umbrella, under that umbrella.
I didn't realize the Florida panther, roams through the Everglades.
In Southwest Florida, it does. Collier County and Lee County are their major habitat. And this is owned by Miami-Dade College County, but it is in Collier County.
That's okay. So that's an interesting relationship there. So what is Sierra Club doing about this? I mean, I would think education, because I had no idea that, you know, everyone's focused on the human aspect, but there's an environmental wildlife aspect that I had no idea about.
Yes, there is also a militarization of public lands aspect and the misuse of military personnel that the Sierra Club is focusing on also. Mm. Right now, we are supporting the Miccosukee tribe in any way we can. We are supporting our partners who filed a lawsuit against the location of the detention center based on environmental law. And we are looking for additional legal angles, but we are also engaged in a national campaign that is really just starting about the use of public lands for immigration activity, anti-immigration activity, the misuse of military personnel. When you think that Marines, I believe it was 200 Marines or 200 National Guard, I can't remember, but I think it was Marines.
Well, Marines in
right.
L.A.
And I think now I'm getting them confused, but, you know, they were using public parks in L.A.
Yeah.
And now they are, while the landing strip is not public land, it is surrounded by public land. So all of those trucks that are going through and all of those impacts are impacting public land that is owned by U.S. citizens. That is our legacy. Those lands are our legacy. And again, our respite. So, we are trying to fight this on a lot of battles. We have an organizer in Miami-Dade County who is also working with the Florida Immigration, Coalition, FLIC, to answer some of those immigration-related questions that Sierra Club has policy on. So it's an unholy mess.
Yeah, and a lot of these folks in those camps, they haven't been formally charged. They don't get to see their attorneys the way they're supposed to.
It's a human tragedy.
It's not even clear that they're actually, like, even here illegally. You know, just there's no standards. And this is a complete abdication of due process. It's pretty amazing for a governor who served in the JAG Corps in the Navy. And if you're not familiar, the JAG Corps, those are the lawyers for the Navy, to be just tossing aside due process in the Constitution, as has been reported. So, it's a shocking time, but there's an environmental aspect, and as you say, the use of public lands as well. And I just think public education, it's so much being thrown at us these days, but for the public to know that this is not what the Constitution and what the founders intended in any way. I mean, you know, if you want to, pursue, and rightly so, people who are here who have committed crimes, that's fine, who may be here illegally and have committed crimes. you better make sure that you've charged them and that they are here illegally. And if you're just throwing that out and using it as propaganda to jail indiscriminately, it's essentially what the Constitution says you can't do. So it's a crazy time, but we need to stay awake and aware of what's going on out there. So I'm going to shift now to something entirely different.
Sure.
But the rhesus whale. Mm. This is a species that was identified in 2021 as separate and different, distinct, a whale in the Gulf.
That's correct.
Yeah. So Sierra Club is kind of working to let us know why is this so important? There aren't many left, are there? Even though.
No, there are less than 100, somewhere between 50 and 100 rhesus whales left. The whale was first acknowledged in 1965 when one washed up on the shore in Pensacola. And it was the BP Horizon disaster in 2010 that started a real the funding to research how that was impacting the wildlife, the marine mm-hmm. mammals, et cetera, in the Gulf. And it wasn't until 2021 that the rhesus whale, a 40-foot long, 30-ton baleen whale that stays under the water, stays in its very, really small, considerably small habitat within the Gulf. It took that long to figure out that it was a distinct species and for people to acknowledge that it needed to be protected.
So spotting one is a pretty rare event then, because they don't spend a lot of time at the surface.
That's right.
But do they have to come up to breathe?
Like every mammal, they do.
Yeah, mm-hmm. So that's something. So they will come up and then they go way down?
That's right.
Wow.
They go way down, and unfortunately their critical habitat is pretty much right under the shipping lanes that go across the Gulf. From eastern parts of the states to Texas and then the United States to Mexico. And so they the shipping lanes are exactly where they shouldn't be. The habitat of the rhesus whale looks like a ditch, drawn or cut kind of right across the Gulf. And in fact, it is. It is a deep part of the Gulf where they live. That's right.
In the Gulf.
That's right.
Okay. What are they? I mean, I've seen drawings of them, mm-hmm. and they're very, like, super long. You said 32 feet?
40. They can be 40 feet long and 30 tons.
30 tons. And they're kind of flat. As whales go, they're elongated and wide.
They are. They're a baleen whale. And so baleen whales are generally shaped a little differently. Baleen whales don't have teeth like orcas do or dolphins or porpoises do. They have baleens. They suck in a lot of fish all at once.
Oh, okay.
And then expel the water through these like fingernail type things called baleens. They squirt out the water. They're not the only baleen.
I didn't even know what a baleen is.
That's what it is. It's kind of like fingernails that are in their mouth instead of teeth.
Okay.
And so they don't chew. They just swallow. They can swallow. I mean, the biggest whales in the world can swallow hundreds, if not thousands of pounds of fish in one big gulp. And then the water is expelled through this kind of like comb-like baleen. Yeah. It is a baleen whale. And so very gentle. It's not going around eating seals or anything. Uh-huh. It is a gentle whale that we are critically endangering with our oil drilling, our ship, very fast ships going across the Gulf, seismic testing, just the noise of the shipping is dangerous to them. But it's our whale. It's our whale. It's in our Gulf.
And it's most of the sightings have been on the western coast of Florida.
You may know better.
Noah says that.
You may know better than me, right?
Yeah, most of the sightings. So it really is our local.
It is.
Our local whale. So you're educating people. Is there's an effort, I would assume, to to protect them, but are they officially an endangered species? Have they been recognized?
They are an endangered species, but they have not been granted critical habitat, so that there is no habitat that is protected for them. It's much like the Florida panther. The Florida panther is an endangered species, but critical habitat has not been designated. And if it's not designated, then it's not protected. Mm-hmm. So before the second Trump administration came in, there was a very big effort to get that designation of critical habitat that would impose rules on shippers at, you know, shipping, ships and shipping companies and oil drilling, companies. But that has gone by the wayside. That doesn't mean we're not desperately fighting for that critical habitat, right now. But it is not easy. And so you talked about education, because I think when people know, when you know better, you do better.
Yeah.
And people don't even know about the rice's whale, right, you know, it's our neighbor. And so our job right now is really to educate people about the rice's whale. And we have a website, ourgulfwhale.org, and you can get all kinds of information on that.
And rice's is rice, R-I-C-E apostrophe S.
That's right.
So is this named for somebody?
Or? It is. When that whale, unidentified type of whale, washed up on the beach in 1965, I think, a whale researcher doing research writing somewhere in the world saw a picture of it. The AP took it. And he was like, that seems like a different species of whale. And he wrote a little bit about it.
Yeah.
And so when it was named a distinct species, it was named after him. He had long since passed, but it was named, and his last name was Rice.
Okay.
So that's why it's Rice as well.
Okay. Wow. Interesting. And I expect, I think I had gone to hear about the Sierra Club locally, and they're talking about having people at the beaches. It would be great to see that, you know, education stations at our local beaches, because I didn't know anything about it. And it's a lovely thing to know that there's this magnificent creature and we have to, you know, protect it.
That's right. Our hope is to create teams along the Gulf Coast that will take this very long banner that will set up on beaches, a life-size banner of a rice's whale, and they'll take that to beaches anytime, whenever they want, just to engage people in conversation, probably with a QR code to send them to the website. It really is just about people knowing what's out there so that they can act to protect it.
Yeah. All right. So tell me about this bear hunt, and I have not, or the potential, I should say, for a bear hunt. And, you know, bears in Florida, it's not something that's top of mind when you think about Florida wildlife. Maybe we start with what kind of bears and where are they? What's their natural habitat and why would people hunt them? Why would the state even consider that?
So those are a lot of questions.
Yeah,
so it's the Florida black bear. Sure.
Yeah.
It's the Florida black bear. It is not endangered. It is not listed as endangered.
Okay.
But it is the gentlest form of bear there is. Florida black bears are, you can scare them away with you're raising your hands. There
so
are videos.
These aren't grizzly man-eaters.
No, they're not.
Yeah.
There are videos. You can go on YouTube and find videos of house cats scaring away black bears.
Okay.
And so black bears are a very gentle creature. They are in their natural habitat in many places in Florida. Not here in Sarasota County or Manatee County, but certainly in Southwest Florida and other places in the state, all the way up to the Panhandle.
Okay.
People who live around them can have trouble with their garbage cans. As we encroach into their territory, they are more likely to get into the edges of that development and look for food. And when you have garbage in an open garbage can, it's like a request. Come and visit. But human bear interactions can be very well managed by things like iron, you know, very closed garbage cans, bear resistant garbage cans. And hunting of Florida black bears is considered trophy hunting.
You're not going to eat them.
No, you don't eat bear meat. It's supposedly
awful.
Awful.
Yeah.
So you're killing bears as a trophy. And there are many hunters, and there are many Sierrans and other organizations around the state that value and honor the right to hunt for food,
mm-hmm.
To hunt when a population explosion is threatening the rest of the ecosystem. There are very good reasons to manage hunts, or allow hunting.
There's a place for it.
There's a place for it. But even many, if not most, hunters in the state, from what we understand, are against trophy hunting. It is unnecessary. And it is generally for an elite group of people.
Mm-hmm.
One of the worst parts of this proposed bear hunt is that they will allow these very antiquated and seemingly very humane methods of hunting, using dogs to round them up.
You mean inhumane?
Inhumane.
Yeah.
I meant inhumane.
Okay.
Yes. Inhumane. Using dogs to round them up, clubbing them to death.
Yeah.
It's really horrific if you like animals and you honor their right to exist and live in peace. It's,
mm-hmm.
it's very difficult. On August 13, there will be a meeting. They have put the meeting in the most far-flung location in the state. It's not even in Tallahassee. It's north of Tallahassee in a small town called Havana.
Okay.
And it is a Florida Wildlife Commission meeting where that commission, who is appointed by Governor DeSantis, will decide not only whether to have the hunt in December, but also to pass over all the decisions regarding future hunts to their staff, thereby removing themselves and any accountability. But as I think people probably know, when you have appointments, if someone is appointed, accountability is almost non-existent. It is very hard to get accountability from an appointed person. So Governor DeSantis is really the person who has the power to stop this.
This is so Florida Fish and Wildlife meeting.
Mm-hmm.
Is that right?
That is correct.
The Florida Fish and Wildlife Commission.
That is correct.
And it's a tactic, I would call, to pass the buck, to put the decision in the hands of people who really can't be held accountable.
That's right.
Okay. Will it be televised, this meeting?
You know, that's a good question. I would guess not. It might be available by Zoom, or it might be on the Florida Channel,
mm-hmm.
But its location might make that difficult. Sierra Club is hiring charter buses to bring people up there.
Is there a place where people can hop on a bus if they want to?
Absolutely. Tampa, Orlando, Daytona, Jacksonville, Gainesville, and probably Crystal River.
Okay.
And you can go to the sierraclub.org website and look for Florida Chapter. And if you go on the Florida Chapter website, it will give you all of the information regarding what we're doing to mobilize against the bear hunt. And again, this isn't against hunters. It's against a trophy hunt.
Yeah. So, and there's not an overpopulation of bears.
No. Well, in fact, they don't have current data on the population of Florida bears. Their current information is 10 years old. And they don't have current information. They're using the information that they had 10 years ago in 2015.
Hmm. Hmm. Okay. Yeah, I've been impressed with your website because for every issue, so there's information about the bear hunt. There's information about the Everglades, alligator, Alcatraz, the rice as well. But you can click it, you know, to go further if you want to take action and know what to do.
That's right.
To support these efforts. So, yeah, you know, I've always been impressed. Chris, like I said at the beginning, your name has always been synonymous with our local Sierra Club. And I thank you so much because you've been doing this for 18 years. And without people like you, this is work. It's really a full-time job, which I'm sure you don't. Do you even get paid to do this?
Oh, yes.
Okay,
oh,
good. Yes. I'm glad you do.
I am staff and I manage staff. So, but I will say it's a really good question. It's a valid one. The strength of Sierra Club Florida is its volunteers.
Yeah.
We cannot do anything without our volunteers. We are a grassroots organization. We mobilize the grassroots. I've been a troublemaker certainly for the last 18 years with Sierra Club.
Yeah.
I've been a troublemaker my entire adult life. And this is a great gig if you can get it, to be able to get up every morning and fight for what you believe in and fight for those who can't speak for themselves. It's a wonderful job.
Yeah. And so if people want to volunteer for Sierra, mm-hmm. find out more about what you're doing, if they choose to financially support you, where would they go?
Well, you can go to sierraclub.org, go to the Florida chapter part of that. That's the easiest way to get to that. And you can find information on how to get involved, how to donate money, many, if not all of our major campaigns.
Okay.
There's contact. My contact information is there. So you can get everything you need there.
Okay. Well, it's been a pleasure. I hope you'll come again. If you want to see, Chris or thank her, you'll probably be there tonight, won't you?
I unfortunately have to travel to Orlando this evening.
Oh, okay.
But, I have an office in Osprey right on 41. Find my contact information on the website and give me a call. I'll take you to coffee. You can come to the office. I travel quite a bit, mm-hmm. But I live two blocks away from my office. So it's very easy for me to meet you there.
That is great. And so everybody, just so you know, if you'd like to learn about reforestation, if you want to see what's going on locally with the Sierra Club, you can go this evening. So this is July 24th. Those of you who may listen later, this is happening July 24th, the Thursday evening at Selby Library, where Charles Reith is going to be discussing reforestation, how you can plant a microforest that can become a 100-year growth forest inside of 10 years. There's a way to do it. He's been on my show to explain it. So that's tonight at Selby Library at 6:30 p.m. Everybody, thank you so much for listening. You've been listening to The Detail on WSLR 96.5, LPFM in Sarasota, Florida, and WBPV 100.1 LPFM in Bradenton, Florida. Be sure to stay tuned for more public affairs programming here on WSLR. Make it a great day.